So what do people think? How is Monty Austin Ford's second draft class being received? Welcome, Bird Gang. On today's show, Zach Gershman joins me. The grades are in, and the consensus is Monty did very well. The Cardinals are a much improved football team, at least on paper. Now we just got to see it on the field. It's Cardinals Cover 2, Episode 753, and it starts now.
Welcome to Cardinals Cover 2.
Buda Baker, one heart, one threat. This guy's unbelievable.
Cardinals Cover 2 is presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcasts.
He's at the 10, at the 5, he's in again! Some more Murray magic!
Wow!
Here's Craig Grealoux.
All right off the top, need to give a shout out to everyone behind the scenes in our digital content and creative team, those that are not forward facing, those that worked real hard leading up to the draft, during the draft, late Friday, late Saturday, everyone from illustration, everyone from graphics, photography, social media. Zach, we poured content, seemed like every single 20 minutes at least, there was a new piece of content out during those 3 days of the 2024 NFL draft. Not going to name everyone, but those out there, you know who you are, and it is very much appreciated.
We got a big department. We got good department. And when you're able to punch out the content the way that we were doing it, it's impressive. It's impressive to see it from a fan's perspective and then to see it once you're actually in the thick of it, and then to also put that fan lens on when you're looking through our social media. You can just tell how talented our team is. It's exciting to work with them because, you know, it makes all of us better.
If you missed any of it, azcardinals.com, the Arizona Cardinals official YouTube channel, has great video behind the scenes, all those draft day calls. And let's start with that, because that might be my favorite part of the 3 days of the draft, is getting to listen to and also see on here inside the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center, inside the draft room, Monty Austin Ford on the phone, and then going to wherever location that particular prospect is, being surrounded by his family and friends, and hearing just, again, these are not long conversations, but Monty giving the player a heads up, hey, we're about to select you. This is a big moment. Enjoy it, celebrate it, and make sure you thank everyone behind the scenes, everyone with you, because it took everyone with you to get you to this point.
It takes a village, and that's there's a village within this own facility here. It's all the scouts, it's everybody that is the assistant coaches that worked the Senior Bowl events, the Shrine Bowl, whatever it was, that they were able to bring the stats and bring the hands-on training, the hands-on work, bring it here to the facility. But those families, those players have those families back at home, and for them to be able to experience it with them, for a guy like Darius Robinson to not only experience it with his family, but to do it in his hometown right outside of Detroit. Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously we know the lineage and the connection that he has with his father, Marvin Harrison Sr. This is a family game. It's faith family football for a lot of these players, and to have all three of those Fs in one sitting, it's beautiful stuff. And thank God for technology, because it gets to bring us inside the houses of a lot of these players, and you could sense the raw emotion. Players that are excited, players that are shocked, players that feel like the weight has just been lifted off their shoulders because they finally got that call that they've been dreaming for their entire lives.
They can enjoy it for the weekend. They can enjoy it over the next week. Rookie minicamp is in 2 weeks. It is, I believe, the 10th, 11th, and 12th of May, and that's kind of when they really step foot in the National Football League and the real work begins. So they get some time now to kind of enjoy things and work out. And there were a couple of players that, oh yeah, Monday morning I'll be back working out. I'll be back at class and ready to go. So this is an exciting time. And real quick, because Danny Sarek, Paul Calvisi, and myself, we had a chance over those 3 days to kind of give our thoughts. Big picture, what'd you think of this second draft class for Monty Austin Ford, and really your first draft class with the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah, my first. And it was an exciting experience. I told Monty when I saw him, I go, You got me in my work cut out for me. 66, 71, 79, scratch that, make it 82, and then 82 to 90. I'm like, that third round was certainly a party that these fingers might not have been super excited for with the amount I was typing. But no, it was an incredible experience. And this class itself, you have wants and needs, as we like to say. And the Cardinals filled all of those wants and all of those needs. They were able to put it all out there. I mean, when you have a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. and then a versatile, violent stud in Darius Robinson headlining your class, and then you start looking down the list and you're saying, okay, and Isaiah Adams, he was in the top 60 of Daniel Jeremiah's top overall prospects. They got him a lot later on. You know, a lot of these other players, Christian Jones, was that player that was 55. I mean, these are some of these players that start to slide and you're wondering why they did. But when you start to see the rise that they had as the season was going on, and for one way or another, they started to slide down, you still get them. Xavier Thomas, our fourth round selection there, the edge outside linebacker, he was a three and out guy in his mind before 2020 began. Obviously, the world changed in 2020 and his world changed as well. But overall, I guess that's the long-winded answer to say I'm really pumped for this class because they seem to be a lot of talented players that are going to be able to make an impact come week one.
By the way, Xavier, fifth-round selection, not fourth round.
Make
it easy. Just say day three.
Day three.
And that encompasses day fourth three. Through seven.
Rabbit was fourth. Look, when you had 12 players, 12 selections, you're going to get mixed up once here or twice. I mean, they said Marvin Harrison Jr. was a quarterback when he was walking out. So, Rich Eisen, Zach Gershman, we both made a mistake. I'll take it.
Here is the draft class. First round, Marvin Harrison Jr., Darius Robinson. Second round, Max Melton. Third round, the round that put Zach over here to work, Trey Benson, Isaiah Adams, Tip Ryman, and Elijah Jones. On Saturday, fourth round selection, Dadrian Taylor Demerson. In the fifth round, Xavier Thomas, Christian Jones. Sixth round, Tajon Palmer. In the seventh round, Jaden Davis. So you have six offensive players, six defensive players, only one underclassman, and that is Marvin. Everyone else has a degree, or in a lot of cases, a master's degree, which puts a lot of us, I'm including myself, to shame considering what they were able to do in 5-6 years, and I just did it in 4 with just my regular bachelor's degree, and I thought that was good enough, but for football players, why not?
I don't need the extra school. The extra piece of paper is I'm still here, Craig. We're both still. We made it to the NFL. That's what matters. We did it.
At the end of the day, that's all that matters. What matters here on Monday, what people are talking about, is what has become a yearly tradition, and I kind of scoff at it sometimes, but I do read, and that is draft grades. How did these teams do? The 32 teams, how did Monty Austin Fort do during those 3 days? I found it interesting, though, Zach, when Monty was asked about, hey, big picture it for us after the completion of the draft on Saturday, his post-draft presser, all right, what do you think, Monty? And his initial response was, can we talk in 2 years? Meaning, we don't really know yet. Mm-hmm. Everything looks good on paper, but until we see these players out on the field, in games, we're really not going to know quite how they fit in with our offensive scheme, our defensive scheme, fit in culturally in this building. We all have an idea, but we don't really know. And then after year one, okay, we project, and he talked about this going into the draft, we project, where is this player, where do we anticipate this player being in year two, as opposed to, all right, the immediate impact. Some of these players will have immediate impact. For others, it might take a little bit longer.
It's funny because we talk so much about this 2023 draft class because we had no choice but to see how much of an impact that they were going to make due to injuries and whatnot. I mean, you have a guy like Paris Johnson Jr. that you knew were going to play every single snap of the season, that you kind of figured was going to be that day one starter. You weren't expecting a Dante Stills to put up the type of numbers that he did throughout the season. Technically, this coming season is supposed to be the season we really judge the class of 2023, Monty's first draft class. But we know the type of talent and the type of person that the staff is bringing in. So yes, while it's going to take some time, that 2 years that Monty said he wants to reevaluate, I am very eager to see how you could judge a Max Melton in year two going into year three, seeing how he was able to produce coming into that cornerback room, potentially pairing him up with a Sean Murphy Bunting or whoever else you're able to have on the outside. There's a lot of young cornerbacks in that room. And Sean Murphy Bunting, albeit young, is the veteran in that room. So it'll be very interesting to see how we do judge these players come year two, year three.
And it's a good example when you talk about 2023, year two of Michael Wilson.
Yeah.
He certainly performed very well. But now with a full offseason and, knock on wood, a full season with Kyler Murray, what is his upside? How about Garrett Williams, who did not have an offseason? Certainly played well. First game out, an interception. But now going into year two. Players like that, when you're a first-round pick, Paris Johnson Jr., you expected him to perform well. Maybe he exceeded expectations because he performed very well and did not miss a single snap. But those other draft picks, it's like, okay, get your feet wet. Maybe you do well, and then it's that second year when things start to slow down that you really pick up steam.
That jump from year one to year two is a huge one, not just because it's, you know, you already have a full season in the NFL under your belt, but for a lot of these players, this is their first, they just had their first off season or time to relax in over 18 months because they were preparing for the combine or for pro days, working on your 40s, not doing the stuff that is necessarily going to be preparing you for third and six. Marvin Harrison Jr., he's prepared for it because he Marvin Harrison Sr. spoke to the handful members of the media after Marvin Jr. was introduced and said, would we rather you use this precious time to know that, okay, the best you're going to do right now is go number four anyway? Or are we going to use this precious time in January and February to get your body right, to relax, get comfortable, have that real offseason, and then we're going to start working towards the regular season once you do get drafted, once you do get the time to participate in these rookie mini camps. So that jump from year one to year two is not just a matter of what you're able to do on the field, but how you're taking care of your body off the field. And we saw pictures of Ketrell Clark. He looks massive. I mean, I didn't necessarily look at him as the biggest cornerback out there, but based off the photos that we've been able to see through the first phase of OTAs and voluntary workouts, he's looking pretty good.
By the way, an update on the offseason strength and conditioning program here on this Monday. Phase two is underway. So now you transition out of the weight room and out onto the football field. No helmets, no contact, no offense versus defense, but coaches can be out on the field working with these players. So that is the next step. And all of a sudden it's, okay, how much did you retain from a year ago? How much might be different? And taking the classroom work during the first phase of OTAs or the first phase of the off-season strength and conditioning program, all right, we got that classroom work. Did it really translate out onto the football field? Do you really understand what we're trying to teach you and to do ultimately on Sundays?
And even though JG jokingly said it, but he's also a little bit serious, he was tearing it all apart. Everything that was taught last season, 2023, it doesn't matter. Obviously, some parts of it subconsciously do, but you know, they're going teams have film of the Arizona Cardinals from this past season. You don't want to be a predictable team. So Jonathan Gannon said, we're going to tear up shop and we're going to come up with something entirely new. It's not to say that the culture is going to be any different. It's not to say that the type of pieces are going to be necessarily different. You still have your offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coach. You didn't lose anybody. To retain an entire coaching staff and bring them in from year one to year two, that's another team that is jumping, that is making that jump from year one to year two. They now have hands-on experience. You're not just learning the players, but now you know what gets them going. And that's what you're able to translate onto the field from the classroom and everything that you were able to watch over film.
Continuity is key here for this coaching staff and also a lot of the players coming back as well. All right, let's get into the new players, these 12 draft picks, the most in a single draft for the Cardinals since the draft went to a seven-round format in 1994. So 12 new faces, and we talk about grades. Going to go over a couple of handful of grades, but more of what was written about the Cardinals draft class. And we'll start with the man who invented this, and that is Mel Kiper Jr. He's been doing it for a long, long time. On ESPN, he had two teams receive A grades, the Eagles and the Cardinals. And this is part of what Mel Kiper Jr. had to write. They really needed a talent infusion in this draft. And he highlighted several players. Marvin Harrison Jr., quote, has everything it takes to be a future all-pro wide receiver. Darius Robinson, his potential is tantalizing. Christian Jones had him as his 98th overall prospect, selected 162nd overall. And then he capped off his write-up with, Austin Fort used 12 picks and hit all the Cardinals' top needs. This is a well-rounded and super talented class.
Anything Mel Kiper says, since he's the one that was really the godfather of the mock drafts and everything like that, he gave it an A plus, or he gave it an A rather. It's an A, no matter what way you slice it. Mel Kiper has seen so many drafts. It's all he does is study these prospects. And yes, to have a talent infusion, Marvin Harrison Jr. is not just a talent infusion of what you bring to the offense, but it's what you bring to the culture. You see that you have a generational talent with Hall of Fame lineage in his DNA, and on top of that, just the name itself and what you're able to bring outside. If he does decide to sign the NFLPA, that Marvin Harrison Jr. jersey is going to be seen quite a lot around State Farm Stadium, and truthfully, I think could be one of the top selling jerseys just because you're able to bring that type of talent in. The way I look at some of these draft boards is when I was doing the mock draft trackers, I was basing their grades off of what the projections were from the mock draft tracker. So to see a Mel Kiper given an A Doug Farrar from TD Wire given an A+, Pete Prisco given in the A range, PFN given in the A range, these are some of the boards that I've studied a lot through these mock draft trackers. They got it right.
Basically, if they mocked it a certain way and the Cardinals went that way, all right, I'll give them an A because they did what I expected or I thought or I believe they should have done.
Potentially. I mean, I know a guy like Charles McDonald, Yahoo Sports, he had Marvin, I believe, and then he had Latu, I believe, going towards 27. Obviously, he went quite early on, Latu did. So he's going to give it a B+, which I understand, but it's like a Pete Schrager, for example, having both Marvin Harrison Jr. and Darius Robinson both mocked to the Cardinals. He better have given that an A+. I'm not sure if he did give his ratings out yet, but he better have.
Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com, Cardinals received an A-. He wrote in part, "This class could supercharge the Cardinals reboot in the brutally competitive NFC West." Dane Brugler, The Athletic, doesn't give grades, but he ranks the teams in order, and he had the Cardinals at number 5. He wrote, "The unwritten goal for NFL teams is to come away from each draft with 4 starters. With 12 selections this year, there is a good chance the Cardinals exceed that number." And first-round picks, yeah, you expect them to be starters. Second- and third-round picks, that is the hope. And whether you are a starter or a rotation piece, but 4 starters coming out of a 12 draft class, that's pretty good. I mean, it's not a great percentage, but the draft with so much that is unknown, you're projecting and you hope to hit 1 every 4 picks.
Yeah, look, you're not going to have Rabbit Demerson be a starter. You have Buda Baker and Jalen Thompson back there. So you kind of know that he's not going to be your starting safety. He's still going to see the field quite a lot. Max Melton, the cornerback, could be a starter. Even Elijah Jones could potentially be one of those third cornerbacks that you potentially slide in there. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a lock to be a starting wide receiver. There's no doubt about it. Darius Robinson has the versatility to be a starter all across the defensive front 7 just because of his violence and versatility, being able to play both on the interior and on the outside. I think he's going to be the most interesting prospect out of the 12 that were signed. Darius Robinson is going to be the most interesting one because he has the ability to put on that weight and go on the inside if needed, but he also has that skill set and what he excelled at this past season at Missouri, 8.5 sacks, 14 TFLs, to be on the outside and get to the quarterback.
Keep in mind, when you talk about a starter, it's the first snap.
Yes.
And then you go to snap count. How many snaps are you actually playing? What is the percentage? So, especially on that defensive line, I would expect and I would hope Darius Robinson, if he starts or not, not a big deal. Is he a part of that rotation? Is he a part of that 5-man, 6-man rotation? And getting consistent snaps where he's maybe not on that first series, but certainly on that second series. And then working his way up, he's got a very talented room that he can learn from and then pick the brain and then figure out, all right, this is what it takes for me to be a starter. But if he is playing 45 to 50% of the defensive snaps, to me, that's a win. Because we hardly saw any defensive lineman a year ago play a percentage that high. But you're bringing in a Justin Jones, a Bilal Nichols, guys that are playing higher percentage of snaps. You paid them a lot of money. You expect them to be on the field a lot more. But when you're a first-round draft pick, 27th overall, yeah, Robinson should be, needs to be on that football field.
We've seen formations and schemes from Nick Riles where he's had three linemen, three edge rushers on the outside, or one going right over the nose tackle, whatever it is. So Darius Robinson will be out there. And that, I think, I saw some people on social media being like, why wasn't the defensive line addressed more through the draft? And it's because of the free agency additions that you were able to bring in, as you mentioned, Bilal Nichols, Justin Jones, Tonga from Minnesota that you were able to bring in. And Darius Robinson is another extension of that because of the ability to go over the nose, go over the center, play that kind of serve as that nose tackle if needed, and get on the outside in that edge room. If he does stay in Rob Rodriguez's room, if that is the case, he is going to be one of the more experienced players at the edge rusher position because of the versatility to be both on the inside and the outside, and having the season that he did at Missouri. We talk all the time about Zaven Collins switching over. This is going to be year number two for him as an edge rusher. It's year number two for a lot of these guys in a lot of different facets. Darius Robinson, we've seen Craig being there for the open portions of practice. The outside linebacker room, they work with each other hand in hand. Even when they're not up doing the drill, they're still working with one another. Hey, I think you should do this, try that. Darius Robinson now gets to join that room potentially and help and coach up in whatever ways that he can while also being coached up himself.
Are you expecting then maybe more outside linebacker position room or defensive line room?
I think outside linebacker, truthfully. I think you pair him up. And once again, this is all based off of the rotation. I'm not saying that Darius Robinson's going to be that starter, play that first snap. I still believe that it probably will be a Zaven Collins and a B.J. Ojulari. But by midway through the season, week 9, week 10, if they do decide to keep Darius Robinson in that room, it wouldn't surprise me if you possibly start rotating a little bit more between Darius and Zaven Collins, and then B.J. Ojulari and Dennis Gardeck. And now you have Xavier Thomas in the mix as well, because he is an edge rusher that could also get to the quarterback.
Curious.
So I kind of keep him there on the outside.
Curious how much Darius was in not a three-point stance. He was listed as a defensive end. How many times he stood up and rushed the quarterback at Missouri? And that skill set, because at 6'5", 285, you know, listed as a defensive end, I'm fully expecting Nick Rawls in this defense to show more four-man fronts as opposed to what we saw a year ago, because that's what free agency told us, that's what the draft has told us, and according to reports, they're adding another defensive tackle in Miles Murphy out of North Carolina. We'll see if that becomes official here in the coming days or maybe next week when rookie minicamp begins. But I had not thought about Darius Robinson as with Rob Rodriguez as far as an outside linebacker, but that versatility, is he down on the ground or is he standing up?
Yeah, he was. So I mean, from what I've seen watching film, he has done both. He has been able to drop back into coverage. Now, he didn't do it as much because of Missouri's style, but because he was really much a downhill, I'm going to try to get to the quarterback, stop the run in whatever way I can. But he was able to step back into coverage if needed, zone coverage. He wasn't necessarily playing as much man defense. That's when he was kind of had the hand in the dirt getting ready to go to the quarterback. But I think he's got that skill set. I truthfully think so. He's a 6 technique, so he will mostly be over the tight end. That's what he did at Missouri. Will that translate to the NFL? Well, the tight ends are a lot bigger in the NFL, so I'm not fully sure. But we saw Darius Robinson walking around the facility. He's a big dude.
He is
6'5", he's huge.
Yeah. He when he walks in a room, people notice.
Oh yeah.
And that is a big individual, very nice individual. And knows exactly what he wants and what it takes to get there. And I think you're going to see no one work harder than a Darius Robinson.
And that's why I think that if they do decide to say, hey, we want you to have a little bit more of that outside linebacker role, not as much that defensive end edge role. We want you to be a little bit more on the outside. If that is the case, I think he's going to be the perfect type of player to be up for the challenge. Now, I do think that if you do put him on the outside, you kind of lose that. I don't want to say you lose, but it limits that violence that he does play with, the inside hand usage that he was talking to us about, him being a technician as he was self-proclaimed himself to be. That's when you would want to have him there on the inside.
Well, we'll see what happens, and again, we'll get our first look during rookie minicamp next week. Not later this week, but a week from this coming Friday. The overall GPA and I can't remember, you forwarded me that, but someone actually went through these grades, 20 different grades, and the overall GPA, 3.61. Now, I'm guessing, Zach, at Penn State or maybe even in high school, did you reach that 3.61 threshold? Did you outdo the Arizona Cardinals? Based off the answer right there, I'm going to guess, no, the Arizona Cardinals were more successful with their report card than Zach Gerstmann was.
Once again, we're all in the NFL.
That's true. We're all in the same spot.
We made it. We made it still. Look, I had a 3.1.
That's good.
So I was close.
Okay.
Just might now have to knock it a few spots past 0.6.
Okay. So judging of talent, Monty Osipor,
I was above a 3.
Hey, that's all. Again, as you mentioned, we're both here at the same spot, right?
We made it.
Yes, we made it.
We made it. Now, look, I might not have the 2 degrees that that Darius Robinson has, but hey, I got a degree and I got a certificate in sports journalism. Shout out John Curley Center of Sports Journalism.
The master's degree that Xavier Thomas has and all these guys coming in that just are not making me or anyone else looking very, very good at this point.
I mean, look, good for them.
Exactly.
Good for them, and good for their academic advisors, because those are kind of the unsung heroes when you get to college. You got to keep these guys level-headed, and you got to make sure that they're still focused on school while ball's still being a thing. So shout out to those people, because now they get to impress you and I by being master's students.
Some other thoughts around about the Cardinals. Now, these are coming from Friday, so after day one and day two. Field Yates on ESPN posted, Monty Osipor is smashing this draft. What a haul for the Cardinals already. Again, that was after the third round, so on Friday night. Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk. Damn, the Cardinals and GM Monty Osipor are killing the draft. Three great players so far, and no question, one of the best shutdown CBs in the draft in Max Melton. Melton can match up with the NFL elite number ones. He is an island CB. Again, you talk about Chris Sims. He does have some interesting takes when it comes to the quarterback position, but he has played the game and knows the cornerback position based off of trying to beat the cornerback.
Terrion Arnold went 24, I believe it was,
He was the second cornerback selected.
Well, Chris Sims had him going to the Cardinals in his final mock draft at 27, and some of the comments were, what are you thinking? Terrion Arnold's going to go in the top 15, top 17. It seems like Chris Sims knew something that some of us didn't, by the way that the cornerbacks are sliding. I mean, 14 straight selections of offensive players, the most amount of offensive players selected in the first round, I believe, in history. It was impressive to see, and the Cardinals contributed to that by adding Marvin Harrison Jr. there at number 4. But yes, I don't think there's a way to dispute it. Monty Osipor truly did a fantastic job this draft. And when you have 12 players, when you have 12 selections, you don't necessarily have as much room for undrafted rookies that you're able to sign undrafted free agents. But hey, I think that first couple of rounds, these are all players that can make an impact come the beginning half of the season. And then there's a lot of players, those day three guys, the Christian Jones, that really could learn from a Jonah Williams and a Paris Johnson Jr. out there.
Speaking of day three guys, I found this interesting. Jim Nagy, executive director of the Senior Bowl, he posted this.
Sleepers.
At the end of the draft, okay, I've posted 3 draft week sleepers over the past 2 years, and the Cardinals have picked all of them, almost like Monty and I worked together at one point. They did, with the Patriots. But his sleepers, a year ago, Michael Wilson. This year, Isaiah Adams and Elijah Jones. And you talk about someone, Adams, who probably would fit in at that left guard spot, and Jones is going to compete as far as being one of those cornerbacks. But two positions that, one, you can never have enough DBs, and in the offensive line, no idea how that's going to shake out, especially on that left side as far as the guard and who's lining up next to, well, lining up to either Jonah Williams or Paris Johnson.
That entire offensive line could completely change. That's the most interesting part, I think, going into the season, is what is that offensive line rotation actually going to be? Because I think now you could kind of say, because the Cardinals did not really bring in a center beyond Evan Brown, who played a little bit of center when he was with the Seahawks, beyond him, Yeldon Froholt is kind of the guy. John Gaines, you're kind of assuming, is going to be a little bit more that guard rotation. He has the ability to play center. But beyond that, unless you were bringing in a Jackson Powers Johnson, who was a true center at Oregon that was potentially going to switch to guard, or Zach Frazier, because the Cardinals didn't bring him in, I kind of believe that Yelda Froholt's going to remain as that starting center. Outside of that, who knows what it could be? Will Hernandez could be moved from the right side to the left side. Maybe if Paris Johnson's also moved over from the right to the left, then you might want to move Will over just because of their chemistry and their connection of playing next to one another there on that right side of the line. But Craig, who knows? That entire line could switch up.
By the way, Adams, 6'4", 315. Most of his career at Illinois at guard, 14 starts. He's got 25 starts overall. But you talk about the postseason All-Star games and him part of the East-West Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl, and the Senior Bowl specifically. Mm-hmm. He worked with Chris Cook,
yeah,
the Cardinals' assistant line coach, who was the offensive line coach for the national team at the Senior Bowl. And that's extra intel that the Cardinals had over another team and why they thought Adams was good enough to be the 71st overall selection.
I asked Isaiah in the post-draft after he got selected. We had a conference call with him, and I asked him about working with Coach Cook. And he said to me, he got to learn how I work and why I work the way I work. And because of that, all these players, most of them, they have a drive. They have their why they play the game. And it eliminates a lot of the Zoom calls that Monty Austin-Ford said that they didn't need to have, because you got to figure out their why by having hands-on training with them that they were able to bring back. I mean, Drew Terrell, as an offensive coordinator in the Shrine Bowl, was able, the East-West game, was able to come back and say, I coached up these players. I put them in meeting rooms. We tried these installs. We put them in. We saw how they reacted to them, not just in the meeting room, but in the practices. And then once the game actually took place, there's no better experience than actually throwing somebody into the fire. And when I asked, going back to Christian Jones, because I think he's the most interesting prospect out of everybody we brought in, maybe behind Tip Ryman, I would say, because of the fact that he did not take a set until his freshman year. But when I asked Monty about that experience, he said, when you go to these Shrine Bowls, the Senior Bowls, they put you in different positions that you don't normally do just to see how you respond to them. Isaiah Adams responded well to them. Christian Jones did, and a handful of others did, and that's why they're Arizona Cardinals.
So for you, will you talk about someone that you're going to maybe keep a closer eye on more than others when you're talking about this draft class? Not Marvin Harrison Jr., not Darius Robinson, someone on day three, you're looking at the offensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see what Christian Jones can do.
Yeah, 100%, because I think so his story, he was all basketball, never played any football till he was like 16, and then ultimately ran into the coach in the hallway and said, all right, he had the dream of playing soccer and everything like that, like all these different sports, and then he said, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to play football, and he was a defensive end primarily in high school, and then he got to Texas, and they put him at offensive tackle. He did not practice at offensive tackle until he got to college. And to see him be a four-year starter, two-time honorable mention, all Big 12, and to put up the type of numbers that he did was, I believe it was only a 2.6% quarterback pressure rate allowed, according to PFF. So he's been able to stand up. And also, Texas had the number one running back in the draft in Jonathan Brooks. Cardinals got one of the next best in Trey Benson. But Jonathan Brooks ran for over 1,000 yards. The Cardinals have a 1,000-yard rusher in James Conner. So Christian Jones knows what he needs to do to get his running back, help him get free.
Most of Jones's experience is at right tackle. He did have 12 starts at left tackle in 2021, but you're talking about PFF grades. He allowed the fewest quarterback pressures over his last two seasons and the fourth lowest quarterback pressure rate among tackles since 2021. And another one of these prospects that has a master's, and Jones has a master's in sports management. So, one, study hard. Two, perform well on the football field. Three, come out and compete, and perhaps maybe not enter the mix as far as a starter, but swing tackle. And all of a sudden, are you active on game day to be that emergency, or hey, something just happened, we need someone to come in for a snap or two or a series or two at a tackle's position.
And as much as I believe he's going to be learning from a Paris Johnson Jr. and a Jonah Williams, which he will, he's got Kelvin Beachum in that room also as a swing tackle. There's not many pros that are better than Kelvin Beachum on a personal level and on a professional level, and as well with on the gridiron, somebody that could kind of turn on that mean streak a little bit and be a dominant lineman. So Kelvin Beachum is one of those teachers. He helped Paris Johnson Jr. out a ton, as did DJ Humphreys. Now that DJ's out, Kelvin Beachum is kind of the veteran in that room because of his experience. Christian Jones is going to have a lot to learn from those guys.
Yeah, no better teacher at offensive line than Kelvin Beachum, who's done that and continues to do it. We saw it late last season come in and play well when DJ was unable to. So, yeah, it's this draft class again. Well, there's a lot of time between now and training camp and preseason games to see these guys, but we're going to be talking a lot about these prospects over the next several days and weeks to come. But, again, on paper, things look good. Now it's, does it look good on the football field?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where, I think sometimes people are, and sometimes, and I understand this, people just look at what is on paper. And once you translate it, chemistry and connection, I think having Isaiah Adams and Tip Reinemann, two Illini teammates, the way that they called each other, the fact that they were so excited to play with one another, there's a sense of comfort when you come into a whole new system. You just fulfilled your dream. You just got the call from Monty Austinfort that you're an Arizona Cardinal. That's fantastic. Now you got to move across the country or wherever you're moving from and, you know, live an entirely new life as a professional. You don't have to worry about classes anymore, even though it didn't seem like that was a problem for a lot of these guys.
I don't think any of them had a problem
with these master's degrees and everything. But now you're pros, and with that comes a whole other level of pressure. So on paper, yeah, some things might look one way or another, but there's also that human element of it. And coming in with a teammate, or for a lot of these guys, potentially knowing somebody, it helps. I mean, Trey Benson even said he didn't really know anybody, except he met Michael Carter a few months ago. And after he met Michael Carter a few months ago, the two of them clicked. He called him one of the best human beings he's ever met his entire life. And now those two are going to be sharing a room together.
I believe it was in Tampa where they hooked up and started working out together. By the way, five of these draft picks, 6 years of college experience. Isaiah Adams, Elijah Jones, Xavier Thomas, Christian Jones, and Tayshaun Palmer. So, and they made the most of their time in college. So, again, a credit to them and a credit to everyone that has put them in position here, and we'll see it for the first time at Rookie Minicamp 1 week from Friday.
I'm excited for it all. I'm excited for it all. I'm excited for these guys to get into the facility. Side note, did you share the Tip Reinemann story with what happened in the media room? So you might not even know the story.
I do not know this Tip Reinemann
story.
Okay, so I do remember. I did. Yes, we didn't share it, but I know where you're going. So enlighten the bird gang.
Yes,
here.
I'm going to enlighten the bird gang. First of all, Tip Reinemann doesn't believe in birds, so
yeah, that's a whole other topic of conversation.
That's going to be a whole other thing. I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit as to what the media does during the draft. We all sit in the media room where the press conferences are held. We have the TV going on there. We find out the news just like everybody else. When it pops up on the screen, when it pops up on the ticker, this player was selected, we right away have to turn everything around. That is why our content team, kind of bringing it back to how we started this off, that's why our content team is so good at what they do with how quickly they were able to turn some of these things around. Afterwards, after the player gets drafted, you have a conference call with them about 20, 30 minutes after they get drafted. They have time to hug everybody and their family. And then who better to speak to next than to us? Duh.
Of course.
Anyway, so we're all standing around this conference center phone and we're talking. We're asking these questions. Tip, you just got the news. How excited are you? You're with Isaiah. All these great things. And then we said, thanks, Tip. Have a good one. And we all walked back to our stations. Greg, about 5 minutes later, it's silent in the room. It's like the voice of God just goes, do I need to stay on this thing? Tip Reinemann never hung up the phone because he wanted to know if we had any more questions for him. So he literally, we're like, Tip, no, you could go, man. Like, you don't have to stay on the phone. He's like, say, I don't know if you guys want to ask me any more questions. Like, I'm sticky. You could ask me whatever you guys want to know. Like, I'm so pumped right now. I just think that that's the human element of it. Going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. These guys are fulfilling their dream that they've worked their entire lives for. The media part of it is a part of joining the NFL. You have a lot more media that's going to be covering your games than you're typically used to. And to see Tip be so happy to just stay on the phone and completely ignore the fact that it was just silent. He didn't think to hang up. It was one of the most incredible moments, a top draft moment for me personally.
Selfishly, I hope he remains that open and willing to speak to the media as he continues his NFL career. I like the availability of players, selfishly, of course.
If he is going to stay after and just say, no, bring it on, man. We're going to bring it on.
We'll see where Tip Ryman fits within that tight end room. We'll see what these players and how they assimilate when they actually get here for rookie minicamp. And this week we will have a chance to hear from offensive coordinator Drew Petzing and defensive coordinator Nick Rollis, get their thoughts on these draft picks as well. You know, they're excited, and maybe Petzing a little bit more excited based off what the Cardinals did, especially with that fourth overall pick and Marvin Harrison Jr., but we'll get to that a little bit later on this week.
I mean, I would arguably put, yes, Marvin Harrison Jr. is Marvin Harrison Jr., and that opens up the offense in an entirely different way. It opens up the offense for a Trey McBride to break free from this double coverage, because now a lot of attention is going to be focused on the outside or even on the slot, depending on where you put Marvin Harrison. But we talked about the violence, and we talked about taking away the football. The cornerbacks that the Cardinals brought in, Elijah Jones, Max Melton, Jayden Davis, these cornerbacks, they're takeaway kings at their schools.
And that is something that this Cardinals defense, especially that secondary, needs, is being able to take away the football. It didn't force as many interceptions, I'm sure, Nick Rollis or Jonathan Gannon wanted last season.
No, not at all. And I think that was a big part of it. They addressed the wants. You want to have takeaway kings that fit the system. You need takeaway kings that fit the system, and they got those. And I think in a guy like Elijah Jones, Jonathan Gannon shared the story of how he was trying to record he was getting ready to show the film. They were going to break it down at the combine, and just by looking at the freeze frame, just a still shot, Elijah Jones knew exactly what the play was, broke it down, explained his whole philosophy, and Jonathan Gannon gave Monty Austin Fort that look and said, whoa. Now you get to have that in your own locker room.
That attention to detail reminded them of Garrett Williams, who the Cardinals selected a year ago. So we'll see what happens this year for these draft picks. Good stuff, Zach. And again, congratulations. You got through your first NFL draft.
Yeah. I'm still a rookie until training camp begins. And then I could say, all right, my first season's done because I completed everything.
Okay. So we'll still treat you as a rookie?
I think I'm going to be treated as a rookie for the next however many years.
You got that right.
Yeah, I know I do.
On that note, we will put a lid on this edition of Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. As always, special thanks to our executive producer, Jim Almahundro, our associate producer, Cody Fincher. For Zach Gershman, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you next time here on Cardinals Cover 2.